Hello and welcome back to day two of Next Tech Africa here in the beautiful city of Nairobi, Kenya. I'm here with a special guest. We were going to have you on yesterday, but there was some meetings.
The schedule was funny.
Why don't you introduce yourself, my friend?
I'm Yusuf Khalidi. I'm responsible for the network at Microsoft. It's an end-to-end responsibility from every server we have all the way to the global network for Microsoft.
So you're in charge of the network at Microsoft?
Yes.
That's crazy, right? Because when we talk about networking at Microsoft, we're not just talking about like our internet. We're talking, are you doing stuff with Azure too?
It's basically called Azure Networking. Uh-huh. But as you probably know, Azure Networking today covers all of Microsoft's network. So Azure is a platform for the company. And Azure Networking is a networking platform for the whole company as well.
So I'm going to back up because I read in your bio that you were there when Azure first started.
Yeah.
Why don't you get into that? Because I'd love to be a fly in the room. So why don't we all be a fly in the room when that discussion started?
It's been a great journey, to be honest. It's been 10 years now when we started. We started 2006, and the idea was to build a platform for web applications. Mm-hmm. And then year after year, we grew the platform. We switched to being an external platform. And here we are today.
So what were some of the initial, so I'm a programmer. So what were some of the initial tough decisions that had to be made that sort of led to where we are today?
A few fundamental decisions had to be made at the beginning.
Okay.
One was to simplify.
Okay.
We had aspirations to be as big as we are today. Mm-hmm. And to be able to automate and run highly scalable, secure system at our scale, mm-hmm. it has to be very simple.
Sure.
So we had a uniform network, uniform server architecture, and a programming model that can utilize that infrastructure. Of course, over the years, we specialized more and added more features, mm-hmm. but the simplification was very important. Contrast that with classical enterprise systems, which has many bells and whistles and configurations and fiber channel and also things like that. So that was a very key decision from the very beginning, to be honest.
That had to be like a challenge, you know, because you have a bunch of probably really intelligent engineers are sitting there, and we have, for some reason, we always want to make things more complicated. How did you fight that? How did you say, no, let's scale back?
Well, let's be honest. It wasn't always a straight line. We made some mistakes.
Sure.
So we made some decisions here and there, but I think at the end, we made more right decisions than wrong decisions.
Mm-hmm. So what is the thing about Azure that you're most excited about that people don't know about, but they should?
Just look around you.
Yeah.
We are in Nairobi, Kenya. There's so much energy and aspiration to use this platform.
Awesome.
So someone like me who started this journey from the very beginning, you see, you are in Africa here, people want to use your platform. And as you probably know, more than 85% of all Fortune 500 users already.
Right.
80% of the world banks use us today. If banks are using your platform, you've made it.
That's amazing. So let's talk about sort of once you started and things started scaling, what were some of the challenges that you had to sort of confront when the scaling started to happen?
So as you probably know, Azure is everything for, you can run high-end enterprise applications all the way to the new born-in-the-cloud applications.
Right.
So as you scale the spectrum, the requirements add up.
Right.
So we had to keep the simplicity. We had to keep the ability to pay as you go, be able to build application from scratch, all the way to be able to have the ability to take a VM, virtual machine, and just run it into Azure.
Right.
So just handling the scale, not just in terms of number of machines and so forth, but the spectrum of APIs, programming models, and scenarios and workloads has been very challenging, to be honest.
One of the cool things that I've seen about Azure is that it started out with VMs, which are like machines, but we're sort of getting smaller and smaller and smaller on the footprint. Now we're down to serverless and functions.
Of course, and containers and the whole thing.
And it's pretty interesting how sort of the cloud has been this huge thing, and now we're getting into the smaller things, but at a large scale. Do you have anything to comment about that?
Depending on what you're developing for, you have multiple places to plug into.
Right.
You can plug into a heavyweight, customized VM, Windows or Linux, your choice, all the way to a function, or a container in between. So again, it depends very much where you are, what application you're developing, or perhaps extending. And by the way, many apps are mostly just calling existing services. Others are writing code from scratch in a VM.
One of the things that I've heard recently, and it started to make sense, is that the cloud is now becoming an operating system.
Yep.
How is the cloud like an operating system, coming from someone that sort of worked on it?
I'm a systems guy.
Yeah.
I've been doing operating systems all my life. This is the next stage, operating systems. Don't get me wrong, the actual OS for a given guest VM is very important. But the collection, the network effect of having so many at the same time, you know, resource management, isolation, security, the same concepts you have in a classical OS apply to the cloud at scale.
Uh-huh.
So for example, you have customer A, customer B running on the same cloud. They have to be isolated, they'll be securely separated, you have to account for resources between them, you have to schedule the work and so forth. Same terms, same ideas you apply in a classical OS in your desktop or your server.
There's a lot of networking magic that's happening behind the scenes, and people are not even, like for example, just the notion of web slots.
Yep.
I mean, this is all DNS type magic that's happening. Why don't you explain that in a technical way so people get a sense?
The basic idea is that to give every customer the illusion of their own virtual network. So what you can do in a classical system where you can maybe get switches and wires or whatever,
right,
you can do the same thing virtually in Azure. You can go to the portal or acquire a RESTful API, create a virtual network, apply the same concepts you can have in networking also in a virtual sense. Key to that, of course, is to make it isolated from everybody else. So your customer A, customer B, you have the illusion of owning your own virtual network, your own cloud.
So the way I do that usually is I get a router,
yeah,
and then I put stuff behind a NAT, right?
Yeah, network, yeah, yeah, all that, yeah.
Is that what's physically happening?
No,
in Azure?
Physically, I mean, it's all software. We actually published papers on this thing. So you can go to SIGCOM, look for some stuff from Microsoft, you can see all the technology in there. But in a nutshell, it's an overlay network.
I see.
So you have the physical network, which basically we own and manage and so forth. And then your virtual network is an overlay. They're separate from her overlay network, and they're separate from each other.
So it's kind of like a virtual machine is on top of a regular
precisely,
OS.
Precisely.
You have a virtual network over, that's why they're called virtual networks.
So the virtual machine itself isolates the VMs, and the virtual network isolates the networks.
I see. So when you're talking about protection and isolation, this is something that we enforce stringently from the beginning.
Of course. And that was a key design decision from day one. You can't have a multi-tenant large-scale system without having security built in from day one.
And it's amazing that we can do that. Here's another, one of the feedback that I've gotten is that sort of we have this curse of choice on Azure. There's so many ways to do the right thing. If someone's getting started on Azure, you that have been there from the beginning, what do you suggest?
It depends where you're coming from, but it's very easy to set up a website, maybe build an application for your phone, and do an end-to-end solution. That can be quite quick, if you will. At the same time, if you're coming from a place where you want to take an existing legacy virtual machine and run it in the cloud, you can also do that as well. So it depends where you're starting from. But if you just want to try things, go to websites. Create a website, maybe start the database in the back end and grow that way.
So one of the other reactions that I've gotten is, but wait a minute, can we put our data in the cloud? I love Azure Platform, but I want to have it in-house. And we had a response for that called Azure Stack.
Of
Why
course,
don't you explain
yes.
what that is?
So key to our strategy is a hybrid model, where we understand customers want to keep some stuff on premises and yet expand and grow in the public cloud. So the same technologies in terms of management, virtualization, identity, security, and so forth apply both to the public cloud and on premises. So you can apply it using Windows Server technologies and the forthcoming Azure Stack technology, which is a version of Azure available to be deployed on premises. It's a combined hardware and software solution.
So let me see if I understand. I have some big, fat, beefy machines. You're going to tell me what machines I can use for Azure Stack. I put Azure Stack on my rack, and it's like I have Azure, but in-house.
Almost, yes. The difference is we integrate them together. We integrate the hardware and the software for you.
Uh-huh.
You just put the whole rack on premises. And much of what you do to manage those machines and the software is the same that you would use to manage the public cloud.
I see. So if I wanted to create a web app on Azure Stack, it's the same thing.
Same stuff. Same Azure resource management model, same UI, etc. Of course, there's some things you can do on premises you cannot do in a public cloud,
right,
and vice versa.
So that's an interesting way of migrating, because some people might say, well, we have all these machines that we have. You put Azure Stack on there as a first step to migrating to the full cloud. Is that right?
That, or sometimes you want to keep your data on premises for regulation reasons,
sure,
or geopolitical considerations, whatever the case may be, or you want to hook it to another piece of machine you may have on premises. You may have a mainframe, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We're fine with that. You put Azure Stack there, and then you connect the rest to the public cloud.
So is there a way to connect like a virtual network from an on-prem Azure Stack to an in-the-cloud Azure application?
Of course, yes, of course.
How does that work? Is that VPN?
Or? We have two options, two broad options. We have VPN technologies, VPN as a service.
Uh-huh.
So you just go to the portal, connect to your current VPN, and it just works. And we also have a private connectivity solution called ExpressRoute.
I see.
Which is more enterprise-centric, where you can bypass the internet totally and just go straight from your network to our network.
So that's an amazing way of being able to have stuff in-house, in the cloud, which is pretty cool. I mean, I don't know of very many other vendors that are letting you do this kind of thing.
Other vendors speak of one extreme typically versus the other. They'll tell you everything should be on-prem or everything should go to the public cloud. We acknowledge that there's a spectrum, and we give you options on both sides of the spectrum.
So let's talk about some of the applications that have been surprising to you. Because sometimes you do some work, and then you see how people use it, and you're like, whoa, I never thought of that. What are some surprises that you've had?
You know, I'm most excited when I see the new born in the cloud application set.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong, carrying the old legacy to the cloud is important too. But the new scenarios companies are coming up with and individuals are coming up with. As you probably know, the cloud is very empowering.
Right.
If you have an idea, you can go and do it. And you know, there are many solutions, IoT, connected cars, the more examples that I can tell you if you want.
I didn't realize how powerful this notion was until I was interviewing someone in Peru and they said, listen, Seth, if I wanted a machine, if I had a startup idea, I had to order a machine,
yep.
I had to come on a boat, I had to go to the docks, I had to pay the dude had to take it to a place that I had to cool, and 6 months later I could start to write the app.
Precisely.
And he's saying the cloud has changed the way, if I have an idea, I can go from idea to born literally in hours.
And you can succeed quickly or fail quickly and try again.
Uh-huh.
In the old days, you want to do a startup, you had to go get $10 million or
right.
something, spend 8 of them on hardware. Who does this anymore? If you succeed, you can go big. If you don't, iterate.
So let's go back to the early days. What were some of the early challenges that we had to overcome that have borne fruit today?
Fundamentally, we were all enterprise software developers,
right.
had the typical software engineering mentality. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
We used to design the software, spend a year designing, a year coding, maybe a year testing.
Yeah.
We had a party, we shipped the CD out, and we repeated.
Yeah.
In the cloud world, it's quite different.
No, you can't do that.
We literally ship software every minute of every day. As I speak to you, somebody's updating some piece of software
right.
in Azure. More importantly, it becomes a shared responsibility between us and the customer. I'm not giving you a CD only, I'm giving you a service. So I am on the hook to make sure the service is up and running as you are using it. So that shift was an important shift. It took us a while to understand that.
And it's a significant shift.
Very much so.
Like the whole birth of DevOps probably was inspired by
precisely,
that.
Precisely. Yeah. And we had to experiment with different DevOps models to find the right balance here.
And that's the cool thing, right? Because I thought about DevOps and I thought about doing the right thing as a programmer, but it isn't until, you know, the stuff hits the fan that you realize you've got to have that process. Was there growing pains when you did that?
Definitely. Because again, most of us were used to, we write the code, somebody tests it, maybe IT would deploy it or somebody deploys it.
There's someone else.
Somebody else, okay?
Right.
Now when you're the developer, you're it. You wrote the code, you tested it, you ran it, and you adjusted and you learned from it. So the closed loop is very important. In the old days, the closed loop took years.
Yeah.
You talk to our customer, I'll give you a patch another year from now, and deploy it another year from now. And say, no. Now it's like tomorrow.
Let's talk about some of the features in Azure that you think people are just not using that they should be.
Well, it depends where they're coming from,
right.
to be honest. Okay, so Azure now is what, 60, 70 services? I no longer know, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay, honestly, guys.
Yeah.
And there's a feature for whatever you need to. If you want to start at the lowest level, or do something simple like a website or a VM, you have those. Or you can move up. The IoT infrastructure is very exciting.
Right.
I mean, I encourage people to look at that once they graduate from the basics, because you can do all sorts of scenarios that are collecting information, aggregating it, sending it out. We have amazing machine learning technologies, big data technologies, even security, identity, and so forth. You can cobble very interesting secure solutions as well. So the short answer is depends where you're coming from.
Right. So let's talk a little bit on my particular background. I love machine learning and AI. What are some exciting things in the machine learning space that you know about that are happening in Azure?
Well, fundamentally, the scale of Azure opens up new ways to do the same things you may be used to. So running a simple machine learning algorithm or something on your, maybe Excel on your laptop
uh-huh.
is one thing. The ability to harness 1,000 VMs in 10 minutes, it's a different thing.
That's
so
amazing.
It's a scale, really.
So it feels like we're running out of time. Call to action. What do you want people to do?
Go to azure.com.
Mm-hmm.
take a look at the website, start experimenting with the system. We have free offers, and it's amazing. It's actually quite interesting. Once you get into it, it's really fun.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
We got to get him on Channel 9. I want to hear like a more in-depth story of like the war room sort of.
We'll be happy to. Anytime, guys.
Thanks so
Thank
much.
You.
Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for watching. We have a session coming up all day. We're going to be having NextTech Africa 2017 here in the beautiful city of Nairobi, Kenya. We'll see you after the session.